Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Couples counseling can be one of the most intimate, scary, and/or healing experiences. So it makes sense that it nearly always happens behind closed doors without recordings. There is one notable televised exception, the very popular and lauded series Couples Therapy, which is now in the midst of its third season on Showtime. Couples Therapy follows couples as they fight, cry, and work through issues ranging from arguments over dishes to coping with childhood abuse. At the center of it all, is a therapist, Dr. Orna Guralnick. She leads sessions with a calm, caring, but firm demeanor. She's an incredibly careful listener. And even with the toughest clients, she is able to help them think more deeply about themselves and their relationship to their partner. Season 3 of Couples Therapy is airing on Showtime Friday nights at 8, and Dr. Orna Guralnick joins me now to discuss. Welcome back.
Hello, Allison. Thank you for inviting me back, and thank you for that warm introduction.
Listeners, Dr. Guralnick has agreed to take some calls. Season 3 of the show is about things left unsaid. So we want to hear from you. What's something that you have been afraid to say to your partner or feel you really need to discuss? Maybe you'll want to share what's holding you back from saying what you need to say. What's a time when you had a tough conversation and how did it affect your relationship? Team All of It, we want you to be part of this conversation. This, of course, is non-medical, non-diagnostic advice. Dr. Guralnick has offered her thoughts, a chance to give us some guidance. Give us a call. 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC. Of course, if you'd like to remain anonymous, you can DM us on Instagram at allofitwnyc, or you can tweet to us as well. Dr. Guralnick, generally speaking, what are some of the effects of lockdown that they had on couples and the kind of questions that have come up that maybe you haven't seen before? Because I'll use the word, it was unprecedented.
Many different directions. One of the things I often say now to people that ask me, since we've spent so much time in this pandemic, is that couples tend to, under the conditions of lockdown and kind of prolonged being at home together, whatever was the groove of that couple got more extreme. So I'm not sure couples surprised me or each other, but whatever was going on underneath the surface or just kind of lightly got a lot deeper. So some couples that had the capacity to really prioritize someone else or turn inward toward the family or take care got a lot better at it. And some couples that were prone to feeling more conflictual or blamey got a lot worse at it. That's one of the main things that I've seen, that it just kind of deepened the grooves of, or the dance that each couple was anyhow engaged in. The other thing that I've noticed is that roles got scrambled. So some people that were typically out of the house and the breadwinners became suddenly the ones appointed to watch the kids. And the other person was suddenly out doing a gig because they were the one that could make money. So roles got reshuffled. Also gender roles got redefined, interestingly. Other things that happened is sex went down, talking went up, lots of TV, more drinking, more weed. people turned kind of inward into their own kind of little cocoon of whatever their family was or whatever their group or family of choice was, and less socializing with others, which added to this kind of deepening of their particular groove.
Dr. Guralnick, when a couple comes to you, what are some of the first few questions you ask them?
I'm not one of those couples people that have like a set idea of what to ask. I actually like to, if possible, leave the space almost unspoken and just kind of say, hi, what do you want to tell me? Mm-hmm. Because it's surprising what people start their session with. Some people have rehearsed a lot of things. Other people might suddenly start with a dream they had. Some people, the couple kind of pulls together and in a way defends together against the third party that's intruding on them. So it's just interesting to see how a couple responds to an open space. But what I really want to listen for is what matters to them. Where is their pain point? And is one of them kind of driving the wish to be in therapy and the other one is already in a defensive spot? Mm. How open are they to talking to me? How open are they with each other? How honest are they? Which will determine how much work I'm going to have to do.
On the show, often we hear about the presenting problem, the reason they've come to seek therapy. For example, mm-hmm. there's one couple in the show who have stopped having sex for almost a year. How do you start to get to the root of that presenting problem?
That's a serious question. I mean, that's kind of what we go to school for a long time.
Of course.
How do you do that? There are different ways of doing that. One is to ask people how they understand, what is their own formulation of what's going on. Hmm. And often people have, I mean, by the time they've gotten into therapy, they've often spent enough time thinking about it themselves. So it's really interesting what people's formulations are of their presenting problem. So, you know, for example, with Sinanyaya, who you mentioned, very soon into the work, I think maybe even in the first session, Sin already said to me, look, I have a history of sexual abuse. So people often know what's going on. If you give them enough space to like look inward and share with you what they're really thinking, they often know. But if they don't, I can go. There are a few pretty typical categories of formulations that I will go for. One would be the dynamic between the two people. So is one of them sort of more, on the face of it at least, looking like more of the pursuer, the aggressive type, and the other one is in a state of retreat. So that's an example of a typical couple's dynamic. So that's more of a systems formulation. Yeah. I might want to know is there any history of trauma for each or both of the partners that might be fueling their presenting problem? I want to know what are the sociocultural contexts, both of the couple together, and meaning what are their living conditions, what are they up against as far as like material stressors, and then what do they each come with or from? So their class, their race, their nationality, immigration, all of that will tell me something about the types of stressors that the unit of the couple is sitting within, and whether they're both aligned, they're coming from the same space, or there are other kind of larger scale cultural dynamics that are getting played out between them.
It's fascinating. My guest is Dr. Orna Gorelnik. Couples Therapy is airing on Showtime Friday nights at 8 p.m. Our phone lines are full, not surprisingly. Let's talk to Claire, calling in from Sparta, New Jersey. Hi, Claire. Thank you so much for calling All of It.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. So my issue right now with my partner is I'm a white woman, a social worker, a political social worker at that, so clinical background. I don't have any. And my partner's Mexican American, undocumented family, and we are having really heated debates right now about the abortion topic. I'm pro-abortion rights. I work in the rape crisis industry, and you know, he's coming from an ultra-Christian Mexican family, and it's really difficult to have this conversation, and we can't avoid it as much as we try to, because it's in my job every day. And it's in, you know, his family conversations every day. And I just want to know, like, how do we go about having this conversation when we're coming from completely different viewpoints?
Claire, thank you so much for the question. So interesting.
So interesting. Yeah. And exactly right what I was talking about, that these kind of cultural ideological backgrounds often have so much to do with couples seemingly on the surface simple fights or simple disagreements, but they're saturated with all of these like very important ideological backgrounds. And it's very hard to really grasp what matters to each individual before, if you don't take that into account. So first of all, Claire, I feel for the two of you. I mean, this is like a really tough one. And in a way, I think the way I would approach it is to assume that to some degree, each and every one of us has a certain kind of inner debate about the topic. It's never completely clear. I mean, even if we have very strong positions, and I might share your position, but even if we have very clear positions on a topic, there are other voices inside us that resonate with other perspectives. So the art for couples is to figure out a way to not get polarized and forced into a very extreme position just because you're in a debate with your partner or with someone else. And it's very hard to do that. But the way it can, I'm going to give a very general kind of prescription of how to do it that is not, I mean, it's obviously easier said than done. But the way to do it is to try to put all the arguments pro and against, all the inner conflicts on the table without necessarily having to own fiercely any one side, but just put them all on the table. And if you're able to say to your partner, look, I get where you're coming from. I get why this matters to you. This is what I understand. You come from this kind of family. This is how you think. This is why it feels so important to you to be part of this position. And this is the legacy from which you come from. And I respect that. Are you willing to hear where I'm coming from? And let's not solve it. Let's just understand each other in the deepest way possible and just let it sit. Let it sit like that without having to force a resolution. Just let time and mutual understanding kind of saturate the space. And you might find that you're getting to like a very surprising new place.
Good luck, Claire. Let's talk to Dan calling in from Brooklyn on line two. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling All of It.
Hi. As a physician, one of the hardest things that in the 80s or so on was for me to do is if I'm seeing one member of a household, the husband, let's say, and he is HIV positive, I have to somehow deal with the problem that he may well have passed it to his wife. And that was a tremendous challenge back then. But now, if I get a couple where people have been isolating so much, you know, for 2.5 years with the corona, if I get one and proves to be positive for corona, the other, who always assumed that the family was an insular unit where everybody sort of isolated themselves to prevent outside corona getting into them. And you have to tell the partner that she, let's say, has to be tested for corona. She feels so violated by the husband who apparently went out there and irresponsibly got himself corona, that it severely stresses their relationship. And I just wondered, since the HIV wasn't even that tough to the unity of the couple, what do you do in these cases where a woman feels that the man dangerously and irresponsibly brought possibly this severe disease into the isolated family bunker, you know?
Yeah, so this breach of trust that has significant and serious consequences beyond broken hearts and hurt feelings.
Very interesting parallel to the AIDS epidemic and how it affected couples. I think, again, it's actually not dissimilar to what I was saying to Claire. In a way, we have to keep in mind that, first of all, complete control over our destiny is not possible. It's kind of an illusion. So the more people get anxious and defensive around this, you know, they have to make certain choices what to do with these anxieties. And again, even people that are super careful and restrictive, they have another side in them. They question themselves, like, should I, shouldn't I, should I be never leave the house, or can I get groceries, or can I ride the subway? I mean, people have multiple sides within them. So when one part of the couple kind of breaks out of a certain kind of, let's say, contract that they've created together, they're not just acting on their own impulse. You can imagine that both people in the couple have those wishes, whether they need to go to work or get on the subway or just get out or see a friend. I mean, they're doing something that the other person might be saying, I would never do that, but they have a little voice in them that wants to do that too. So I think the trick here is to move out of this kind of paradigm of extreme polarization and blame and say to the other person, how dare you? How could you ever do that to me? But maybe operate from the position of, oh, I wanted to do that too. And I can understand why you did that. It might be really upsetting. I might be really afraid, or gosh, you exposed me now to a great risk. But I can also extend a certain level of understanding and compassion, so we can talk about pragmatically what to do now in this case, rather than get caught in a blame cycle that will then, not only are you dealing with COVID, you're also dealing with like alienation inside the house. Mm-hmm. That's not going to help anyone.
My guest is Dr. Orna Guralnick. Couples Therapy airs on Showtime Friday nights at 8 p.m. We'll have more with Dr. Guralnick after a break. We'll hear more about the show as well as several infidelity questions we have. Stay with us. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Dr. Orna Guralnick. Of course, you know her from Couples Therapy. Season 3 is airing now, Friday nights at 8 p.m. on Showtime. There is a couple that we follow on the show, Ping and Will. And Ping, she can't seem to have empathy for how her partner is feeling. Often when you turn to her and ask her about how he's doing, sometimes he's weeping, she uses the word whining. And she's very consistent, at least in the beginning. What do you do when you have a client who is seemingly intractable? How do you start to make movement?
Well, I have to say that most people are not intractable. It's a question of how to reach them and where to find them. And with Ping, it took me a while to figure out her cadence, her rhythm, and what's underlying the veneer of aggression that she put forth. And actually, if you stick with the show, you'll see her go through pretty dramatic changes. It was about trying to understand her, first of all, on her own terms, so that she doesn't feel like she needs to fight so hard to be understood. But then at the same time, engage her both in some curiosity about herself so that she's not caught in these kind of automatic behaviors, but she starts to self-reflect, and to consider her impact on her partner, on her environment, and to consider both because it will make her life better if she takes in how she's impacting him and contributing to their dynamic, but also because she does actually care about her partner and husband, and it feels much better to operate from a place of concern and compassion than from a place of defense and attack. And with Ping, it was, I mean, once we found each other and she kind of got in touch with her own curiosity, she made dramatic progress in terms of, she moved from being attacking to being actually a very good listener, quieting down, and in a way, passing the challenge on to Will to start really look at himself.
What gets in the way of people listening?
Yeah, that's a great question. What gets in the way of people listening? I think an ongoing feeling of being unheard that they're probably carrying with them for a very long time. So in a way, their own agitation and suffering from inside is almost deafening them to others. Sometimes it's literally like habits, like people don't have the habit or the understanding of the difference between attending to one's own thoughts and listening. So sometimes it's actually very simple to ask people to kind of take a different position, take the position of listening. But often it's related to kind of a long standing, if you wish, wound of not being heard, not knowing how to even offer that.
Let's take a few more calls. On line three, calling in from Connecticut, someone who would like to remain anonymous. Hi, thank you so much for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, you're on the air.
Can you hear me? Okay. So it turned out that, and it's funny you brought up about the cultural, because he was not born in this country, sort of started flirting, and he is a big flirt, but he flirted in a way that was inappropriate with my then 19-year-old niece. And he got called out for it, and there's members of our family that don't like him or want to speak to him about because of it. And we talked about it. He wrote a bunch of emails to her apologizing, but not really. It was more like this defensive kind of, what's your problem? Sorry if I upset you kind of thing. And then I brought it up a couple of times, but he gets extremely angry and hysterical about it. And he can't, like, just what you were saying before, listen to how I feel, or at least have it somehow resolved. We've been in couple therapy before. We're sort of on the brink of deciding what to do next chapter of our lives, and he wants to go back in, and I'm like, well, it's your turn to find the therapist. So, you know, but that's sort of a wound kind of thing that we've never really been able to patch together, at least not as far as I'm concerned. There's been other people in my family that he's flirted with as well that got upset about it too. So it's not just one person.
Thank you for calling in. That's an interesting case. The micro is, in her specific case, her husband is flirting with family members and a younger niece, which she thinks is inappropriate. The bigger picture for other people is when you have something with a spouse or a partner that you can't agree what the behavior is. How to view the behavior, I should say. So I'm going to leave it with you, Dr. Gerlach. I just kind of want to give the macro idea and then the micro and then the macro.
Right. Complicated. I think I want to make maybe an artificial distinction here between behavior that is potentially harmful to others, like a person, an older person, maybe with some kind of position in the family, flirting with or being sexual with someone younger in the family, which is, you know, that we're getting into like more complicated territory there of like, you know, are you violating someone's rights and are you violating someone's I want to make a distinction between that, which is complicated, and I would address that maybe on a few different layers, and then other situations in which two partners don't actually agree on what is the right conduct, what is the right code of conduct. And those are different, and indeed they are very culturally saturated. So what to do? I mean, in terms of again, this is very cookie cutter kind of, it all depends on the nuances of each person. But if I had to speak in generalities, I would want to, if your partner is so defensive and has such a hard time really kind of understanding the way he's perceived, maybe the first order of business is to try again, as I said earlier about listening, to give him a good listening, meaning to really ask him to articulate all the different positions that he stands for, why he feels like what he's doing makes sense, where he's coming from, what is he feeling, like really give him a good experience of being heard, which might then reduce his defensiveness, and then see if he can at the same time consider other perspectives. the niece's perspective, your perspective, family member's perspective, and again, not force a quick resolution, which might put him on the defense, but see if he can move beyond his own shoes and understand his behavior in a larger context, context of a family, a larger cultural context, age differences. That would be my advice.
We've got several questions and calls about infidelity, so I'll choose this one, and maybe we could talk about both sides of it. What are tools you would suggest to use in order to move on after an affair in a marriage, asking from the partner who did not have the affair but wants to heal and process?
That's an interesting and not unusual question. How do people recover from transgressions, from hurt, from infidelities? We actually, the season that we're filming now, we have a couple that's working on that very intensely. I would say, again, I might sound like a broken record here, but I would say, first of all, make sure that each side gets to articulate the full story of where they were coming from. Both the person hurt, the different ways in which they were hurt, why they were hurt, the effect it has on them, maybe how it ties to something that happened to them earlier in their life, ways that they experienced the particular transgression, like in what way is it the most hurtful, meaningful, disturbing for them? And for the person who has, let's say, strayed or committed the transgression, I don't know what words to use, to try to articulate where they were coming from in the most honest way. And I think honesty is really key, because one of the issues is, of course, breaches of trust. People have a certain expectations, and I'm assuming we're talking about people who value monogamy, which is not everyone. So this might be experienced by them as a very serious breach of trust. So where was the other person coming from? What was the issue? What was motivating them as a person? And what is their take on trust? And can they speak in a way that is not just, doesn't sound just like an appeasement or a cover-up, but can speak from a place of honesty in themselves, of what was motivating them? And then to try to understand what was going on in the system, in the couple's system, that led to the need to bring in a third party into the dyad. And what was the function of that between them? What was going on between the couple? What was this event trying to address between them?
Let's take Ed on line one, calling in from Plainfield, New Jersey. Hi, Ed. Thank you for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. The call was just a basic, I don't know, I don't want to seem embarrassed, but it's just, I've become comfortably numb because of lack of affection. There's been just nothing. After our second daughter was born, it's just like everything's turned off. I can't do or say anything right in the house. I can't. You know, it's just why, it's almost like, why am I there?
Ed, thank you for putting forth your question, because we had several questions like this. When you are in a marriage or a relationship, because it is the norm, it's your everyday life, but perhaps you feel like the love is gone, perhaps you feel like the sexual attraction is gone, perhaps you feel, you're asking yourself your question, as Ed is, why am I still in this marriage? What are some good ideas or questions people might be able to ask themselves as they're in this position?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to speak in great generalities. But first of all, it sounds upsetting. I mean, in a way, numbness and apathy is sometimes worse than hate and arguing. Scary. I would not, especially as a couples therapist, I do not rush to conclude that things are just gone. I assume that, you know, I'm a psychoanalyst, so I give a lot of space for the influence of forces that we're less conscious of. So I would, in the case that you're describing right now, my first inclination would be to wonder, I mean, if the wife is indeed so switched off and unresponsive, is she, first of all, mad? Is she upset about things and there hasn't been space between the two of you to actually process it, to have productive interactions about it? And if you really want to figure out what was going on, maybe see if you can put your own injury to the side and ask her, are you suffering? Are you hurt? What's going on here between us? Tell me what's really the issue here. And see if you can make space for that. Just listening, trying to understand, who is this person who has shut down to you in this way? And similarly, ask yourself, what's underlying the numb feelings? Typically, those are pretty strong feelings. If you can just access them, disappointment, hurt, abandonment, what might be going on underneath there?
You can learn a lot by watching Couples Therapy on Showtime. Season 3 is airing now, Friday nights at 8 p.m. My guest has been Dr. Orna Goralnik. First of all, thank you so much for taking our listeners' calls. We really appreciate your help, and thank you for making time today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Allison.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.